Hi, this is Julie Christensen with APSE. We're excited to launch the APSE Employment First, Employment for All podcast as a new way to connect with you. This podcast is a way to provide updates, real-time advocacy alerts, and information related to all things Employment First. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and thanks for listening.
Session about pretty cool legislation that passed and with some appropriations. We look forward to telling you more about it. But first, I want to just let you know that we have some resources that will be attached to our session in case you're interested in any of those, and that we are going to be doing this almost like we were in person, live together. We're going to have the conversation with the panel, and we will also be a part of the live conversation when it happens and ready to engage with you in the chat box. So please ask away as we present away. And we're going to start with introductions. My name is Katie, and I'm a middle-aged, or Katie Tellercio. I'm a middle-aged white woman with long brown hair. I'm wearing a gray shirt and a black jacket. And I work for the Colorado Department of Healthcare Policy and Financing, which is also known as Colorado Medicaid. And I'm gonna hand over the next introduction to Marilee.
Hi, my name is Marilee Boylan, and I'm a 47-year-old woman with chin length, light brown hair with some gray in it, and a strong nose. And I'm wearing a royal blue top with an off-white crocheted sweater. I am the first vice chair for the Colorado State Rehabilitation Council and the co-chair of the Employment First Advisory Partnership. Darby?
My name is Debbie Renly, and I am a 37-year-old female with long blonde hair. I'm wearing a gray shirt and a black scarf, and I'm the Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities Supported Employment Coordinator and Trainer with the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. Jackie.
Hi, my name is Jackie Pogue, and I'm 40 years old. I have long brown hair, purple glasses, and I'm wearing a blue shirt and a blue scarf. I'm really happy to be here today. I work as a research associate and IPS trainer at Westat, which is a research company, and our center is called the IPS Employment Center. And Michelle.
Hey. Hi, everybody. My name is Michelle Sparling. I'm from Networks for Training and Development based in Pennsylvania, but I'm here today representing ACRE, the Association for Community Rehab Educators. I'm currently the vice president of ACRE as well as the curriculum review coordinator. So I'm a white woman. You're all saying your actual age. I'm a 50-something year old, younger 50-something year old woman. and I'm wearing glasses. I have shoulder length brown hair, and I'm wearing a white shirt with white applique, and I'm in my office with bookcases and books and pictures behind me. And Carrie, you're next.
Hi, everyone. Carrie Tejan. I'm with APSE. Oh, that is okay. But it is pronounced Kari. So thanks for everyone for joining. And at the APSE conference, we're so excited to have this panel. I am the Certified Employment Support Professional Credential Certification Director here to talk about CESP and the collaborations with these lovely folks. I am a woman in my early 30s. I am 32 with long brown hair, and it's wavy today. I'm wearing a black shirt, and I have a blue painted wall behind me. Thanks, Katie, for bringing us together.
Yeah, what a dynamite team. Thanks for all coming together to tell this really unique story happening in Colorado. We're going to talk as a panel, but first we're going to start with what I keep hearing is a hot topic across the nation. And so we want to make sure we hit these critical parts about how the legislation came to be and what spurred it on. And we have our subject matter expert, Marilee Boylan, to talk us through that. Marilee, can you tell us about how this all came to be in Employment First in Colorado?
Yeah, I was very honored to be a part of that process with the team of people. Senate Bill 1677, it's called the Employment First for People with Disabilities, and it was a grassroots effort visioned by advocates, people with disabilities, and their families. Senate Bill 77 was Colorado's initial employment first bill, which really took hold and created momentum for our state. And while working as a director for a local ARC, we advocated both at an individual and a systems level to increase community access for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And what we were seeing and across the nation saw that 85% of folks we were supporting were not working. So we started to look for statewide systems level solutions to increase employment outcomes. As an organization, we had no prior legislative experience, but we understood that the complexity of the barriers to employment really needed the solution starting from the state level. We began to craft some ideas for legislation with our local representative based on the Department of Justice class action settlements from both Oregon and Rhode Island. Those consent decrees outlined really useful systemic change that we were hoping to reproduce here in Colorado. And I'm laughing because Bill 77 was nearly killed in the Senate. And this next part speaks to the power of testimony. It was only revived after many people with lived experience told their story of the difficulties they were facing in looking for work. The Senate then promised to figure out a way to move forward with the bill. So we had what was called the strike below amendment. So everything that we had put together, we carefully crafted, was thrown out. And but the beauty in this is sometimes you don't know what's going to happen with legislation. And this is where the Employment First Advisory Partnership was thought of and created. And the Employment First Advisory Partnership's mission was to gather a group of people, a diverse group of people, to identify barriers to employment as well as solutions to increase the number of people with disabilities employed throughout the state of Colorado. And Senate Bill 77 required a number of stakeholders, some being the Colorado Department of Education, Department of Healthcare Policy and Financing, the Department of Higher Education, Department of Human Services, and the Colorado Department of Labor and Employment, as well as other advocates. So representatives from the from APSE, advocates for persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities, as well as people experiencing disabilities themselves. And when you talk to EFAT members, you'll really hear from them that the collaboration between the five departments and the advocates has been one of our most valuable assets. This collaboration has been key to identifying the barriers and the potential solutions in our state. The other thing that Senate Bill 77 did was to designate the State Rehabilitation Council as the lead agency to coordinate the Employment First Advisory Partnership. Every state has an SRC. The SRC is a governor-appointed council in every state that ensures the involvement of people with disabilities and advocates in giving valuable input to the vocational rehabilitation systems. So as we look at ways of replicating these sort of things, or things like EFAP, the Employment First Advisory Partnership was placed under the auspices of the State Rehabilitation Council, and it really was a no-cost solution. And that was the way we passed the bill, because at the time, the fiscal notes were not going to make it through the legislation. And so this is how we made it work. And this can be helpful for other states to replicate now as we face the financial impacts of COVID. So the EFAP, when we got together by the end of the year, after we had met many, many months, it had resulted in a 23-page document that identified 8 recommendations, each with suggested actionable objectives. And later on, we'll provide you a link to the strategic plan so you can access the recommendations in further detail. After we had created the strategic plan, that really guided the next legislative push for content in Senate Bill 18-145, which was called Employment First Recommendations. Looking back at how that legislative bill came together, we worked in partnership. As you look at potential legislation in your state, look at your your partners, your resources with people who have lots of legislative experience. We work with the ARC of Colorado because they have a huge amount of legislative experience, and we had their help to really narrow down the strategic plan and focus on a few strategies from the strategic plan in order to build the legislation from Senate Bill 145. So Senate Bill 18-145, or Implementing Employment First Recommendations, did a few things. It refined the outcome data measures that we were supposed to track over time. It added the requirements for training or certification for employment support professionals, and directed VR to pay for the discovery process. And during that time when we were working with stakeholders in building the bill, because of service provider stakeholder involvement and input during that process, this legislation included a fiscal note which would reinforce supported employment agencies for all the training and certification expenses, as well as the hours the staff spent in receiving the training and certification. I know the legislative process can seem really daunting, but it's really important to remember that without you, legislators are not able to make educated decisions about the systems of support that people with disabilities use. They need you to share with them the barriers that you're experiencing and the solutions that you see in order to increase employment outcomes. Once healthcare policy and financing was appropriated the funding for training, then they reached out to the service provider community to better understand what they needed and wanted. And Katie and Darby, can you talk a little bit more about what you found out?
Yeah. Thank you, Mary Lee, for that history. I think I'm going to carry on with that torch of the voice of the people matters, right? Like what I remember a lot about is people had some ideas with EFAP and with designing the legislation and things that we wanted to require certification, that people for sure needed to get a certification. And we thought that was a good route to go. We were, Kari's going to talk a little bit later about the CSP. We were reaching out in that angle and thinking about that. And then because of the diverse stakeholder input and really call to action, you know, for us to consider something else, we were able to meet them where they were and figure out. And at the time, I will be very transparent and say I was one of those stakeholders for a while, because I hadn't started working in the position. That was before the legislation went through and Medicaid could hire somebody. And I just remember thinking, this is great, because the state is actually asking us what we think and what could happen. So I think that was a pretty powerful experience. And what people told us was, we want options. We want training. We want certification. We want to do our jobs well. We want to be supported professionals. And to do that, we needed to offer both training and certification in a way that people could make choices and choose from. So I think that whole process was really neat. And then I got to experience working in Medicaid and, you know, in lockstep with the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, and together we did this thing that I got to learn about, which is called promulgating rule. And that was a lot of fun. And again, that took quite a bit of stakeholder input. We, you know, how should this look? What's going to happen? We were able to really partner together and say, you know, if Colorado isn't this employment first state, people are, you know, learning these new skills, what are the core competencies that we want to ensure are happening? So we have our own state core competencies that really fit beautifully and well within the nationally recognized training and the nationally recognized certification. And we're going to hear a little bit more about that, but I just want to mention also that to implement this endeavor where people could get reimbursed. So we're focused on Senate Bill 18-145 and the training and reimbursement for this panel discussion, but we had to do a ton of work together. We had an interagency agreement with DVR, and what happened, which was cool, and Mary Lee, correct me if I'm wrong about any of this, but there was a neat opportunity in Colorado where we had enough money coming in from the appropriations with these legislative and with this legislation that we met the full federal match with DVR, and that just really grew the resources and our capacity of what we could offer in our state. So we have this neat process where HCPUP or the Medicaid has the admin person to help, but then DVR is paying a lot of the reimbursements. So we are in coordination talking on a daily basis and put that whole process together with our partnering. And I'm going to have Darby talk a little bit more about the partnering, and then we'll go on to some of the national perspective, but we'll get into some of the details about that too. But Darby, what do you want to say about the partnering?
Perfect. Thank you, Katie. Yeah, so I mean, as far as the partnership that we have, it like Katie said, I mean, we meet all the time. We're constantly discussing how things are going and making sure that these providers are being offered these training opportunities. And this partnership is really put in place to ensure that all individuals have access to services to help them obtain and maintain employment. The collaboration that we have with healthcare policy and financing is to ensure that individuals are getting connected with DVR, and that as they're working towards getting connected, that they can have access for these services through their Medicaid waiver until they're in a plan with DVR. So through Senate Bill, it's really great because they're we're providing this opportunity for these vendors to have access to this training to ensure that they understand all these options that are out there for the individuals they're working with. So I sit on a community of practice, and it's been really interesting because we're seeing that not every state has this. There's a lot of states that don't have that partnership between their vocational rehabilitation and their Medicaid agency. And so that's really kind of what sets Colorado apart from other states. DVR and healthcare policy and financing have been conducting statewide IDD roundtables with every one of our community center boards and their local DVR offices. And through these roundtables, we've been providing information about the collaboration that we currently have together, and then have also been providing direct training to our supported employment case managers to ensure they understand how we work together, how we collaborate, and then also how they can provide the highest quality of services to the individuals that we serve. So these roundtables really provide information on the ACRE training programs that have been approved and have been approved to be reimbursed through Senate Bill 18145. And our hope is that by making these trainings accessible to our state vendors, that we're really promoting a higher level service delivery. One of the trainings that is currently approved and is that the ACRE training with an emphasis on customized employment. So we're hoping that our vendors will obtain the foundation for providing supported employment services by attending that ACRE training. But then because DVR specifically offers some reimbursement options and some incentive payments, they would then choose to expand upon that information that they learned through that ACRE training and then move on to customized employment certification so they can provide that tier three customized employment services. So we do require that our tier two, our supported employment service providers, hold an ACRE certificate through an ACRE approved training program in order to continue to provide those supported employment services. But through the requirement of these services, we've really seen that our vendors have a lot of buy-in to these trainings. COVID's put a lot of stress on our providers and has made finding employment and placing individuals we serve much more difficult. And so through these trainings, they're learning strategies and techniques to navigate providing job prep and development services in the world that we live in now. I've had providers reach out to me and provide really positive feedback on these trainings and how they've walked away with so many new tools when working with individuals we serve. So these trainings have really instilled a new set of confidence in them when providing job prep and development services. And I know just from personal experience, when I attended, when I was a DVR counselor, when I attended an ACRE-approved certificate training program, that, I mean, I walked away with so many tools, not even as a direct service provider. It was really, really neat because some of the activities that we were doing was to go out into the community and job develop, and then taking those skills back as a DVR counselor, I ended up reaching out to that same employer that I did some of that job development through that activity, through that ACRE training. So just really providing those tools that our vendors need and our service providers need to really kind of navigate providing the best job prep and development services they can to the individuals we serve.
Yeah, that's excellent. I love that idea of all those diverse connections that can be made and from whatever perspective we're coming through on. And that, you know, I want to just mention that we had this legislation and we had money, we had appropriations, we were ready to rock until we realized that in Colorado, we want all of our service providers to get training. And I'm going to ask Kari for you to talk about this as well. Also the CESP, the way you could get the CESP was sort of changing at the same time. So we were in this neat stage of opportunity, but also in this interesting stage of change too. And one of the things we realized is we didn't have local trainers at the time. And so we had money and interested people. And so I'm gonna leave it there for the national partners to take it on. I don't know if Kari, you want to start and then we can have everybody respond.
Sure. I can speak a little bit. So Kari here again, and I'm the CESP certification director with National APSE and have been in this role for a few years, but started my role as a job coach, job developer, and earned my CESP after working a full year in the field. I attended an ACRE training, which was fabulous for getting me set and, you know, confident in my skills doing the day-to-day work of finding and maintaining jobs in the community for people with disabilities. And I'm here in Iowa. I remember when I was first brand new on the job, Katie, you and I connected to talk about CESP and think about what Colorado was going to look like moving forward. So Colorado was looking to host its first certified employment support professional examination using proctors and mailing the exam through FedEx. We no longer have to do that. It's fully available and now even online. So we were going through a process of expanding the credential, plus talking about what is going to happen in Colorado as competency-based requirements for employment support professionals were written in. You and I had a conversation about what other states are doing and what can we learn from, and how can we bring in other stakeholders like ACRE and training entities to give more opportunities for those employment support professionals. The credential is one awesome stamp of approval. You know, you become eligible after working for at least 1 year or 9 months with a training in the field of employment supports. And then you can sit for your examination and earn your credential. But there need to be many pathways for employment support professionals to get training, get experience, and get involved in the community so that they stick around and hopefully reduce the turnover. We need quality, competent staff working with people with disabilities and employers if we're going to move the needle forward, right? One of the benefits of the CESP and how it relates to some of these other partners is it was created using stakeholder input from employment support professionals on their daily job. So asking individuals, what do you do every single day in working with people with disabilities or employers? And how important are those to actually achieving jobs? And so the job description and job analysis process resulted in this examination content outline. That content outline is now used by ACRE and APSE as part of our employment competencies so that we have a consistent language and training tool across the field. Michelle, I'm going to punt it over to you now to talk a little bit if you want to take over.
Sure, absolutely. I'm so happy to hear your positive experiences around the ACRE training. There are about 23 ACRE training providers that are endorsed curriculum providers right now. There are five, and actually as of today, we just approved a sixth basic certificate with emphasis on customized employment, which I know is very important in Colorado. So we're super excited about that. I know we're going to talk about capacity as we move forward a little bit, but I just wanted to touch base on how we got connected. So it was back in August of 2019 where Katie, you reached out to the ACRE board and said, hey, I would love to chat. I want to let you all know what we're doing in Colorado, and we need to figure some things out around training. So we got to put together with some of your team and some of the ACRE board members, and we kind of fleshed out some ideas, you know, what were the needs, and it clearly showed that capacity was your greatest concern, and quality training and credentialing is really important. And we know from the ACRE standpoint of how important capacity building is, we're striving to find organizations and really promote ACRE as an organization that you can come to for quality training. But we also need to find organizations that want to have endorsed curriculum. So it's a big problem to have. It's a good problem to have. So we started conversations about what would this look like. And one of the things that we had done was we reached out to our members and said, hey, they're doing some wonderful things in Colorado. We would love your support. We would love to see how we can support Colorado to increase employment opportunities through quality training, using best practice, using the competencies that we're all talking about and how important they are. So I know that some of our members did reach out with proposals to Colorado, but we also have a website filled with training providers that anyone in Colorado, any of the stakeholders, anyone who needs to get the credential, can simply go to the website, take a look at the organizations that are offering the ACRE training, and make their own decision about, you know, which provider works best with their schedule. And, you know, we talk about how difficult it's been through the pandemic, but to be honest, this has been opportunity to provide online training in ways that we would have never done before. So that I know was another issue early on. Colorado being a large state with a lot of rural areas. And, you know, how do you figure out some in-person training and the expense around some of that with travel for organizations that can provide the curriculum? Well, just about everyone, almost all 23 organizations went online and have been providing online content. Now that the pandemic is slowly leaving us, we're seeing some life resurgence in different areas. The ACRE credential will make a shift. There's been a temporary approval for most organizations who applied for it. About 12 organizations that did not offer online curriculum are offering it through December. There's an expectation of an explosion on our end of organizations now submitting permanent online curriculum, which is then going to just build the capacity that much more for Colorado as well as everywhere else to build this capacity. So we're super excited about what's to come.
Yeah, that is exciting. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And then I want to bring in, and this is one of the things I meant to mention earlier, but one of our bigger audiences, which we're so grateful to have, is our the arena of behavioral health and the mental health centers and the success and excitement about individual placement and supports and how that is a very successful supported employment model. And Jackie, can you share your partnership?
Sure, great. So I work for an organization, our center is called the IPS Employment Center, and we over the past 20 years have run this international learning collaborative. So a quality improvement collaborative focused on supported employment for people with mental health challenges. And right now there's 25 states and I think three or four countries that are a part of it. And it's a train the trainer approach where we have a handful of trainers and we work with states or jurisdictions to do some planning and development around getting IPS programs going in their area. And so we had started partnering with Colorado in 2013, providing technical assistance and support around building up this service within the mental health system. And part of that is that we encourage states to have their own IPS trainer who's gonna be delivering training and technical assistance to different sites. So the cool thing is that Colorado already had that in place. you know, they have a really amazing network of IPS providers there. And so it was this really great kind of pathway to doing IPS certification as well. So we offer IPS certification for people who are employment specialists or supervisors, trainers, like whatever kind of role that they're in IPS. And they need to have a combination of education and experience. And most of it is like 1 to 2 years in that role that they're in, and then they can qualify to take an exam. And the exam is online, and it's 100 questions, I think. And people can retake it if they struggle to pass it. So we do like study sessions with folks, but it's been really great to be able to offer that in tandem with ACRE and the CESP certification. And I will say that also we run a lot of online courses and you know, online training is not for everyone, but it is a nice accessible tool for folks who maybe live in areas where they're not going to get a lot of in-person training. And the way that they work is that there's sort of skill-focused modules around different content related to what people are doing in their everyday jobs. And then they submit homework to instructors like myself or the other people on my team, and then we give feedback on it. So it has a nice component where you're practicing the skills and getting feedback from people who know about IPS. So I feel like we try to have multiple pathways to helping people build the skills, and we're glad to be able to support Colorado in this capacity.
Yeah, and I just want to mention quickly too that you've really provided some technical assistance to our Colorado Office of Employment First that is now offering IPS training locally here in Colorado.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Colorado. We love working with you, and it's been such a great partnership over the past 7 years. And moving forward.
That's right. More to come, right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you all so much. I think we, just looking at the time, I do want to talk a little bit about some of the successes that we've seen and the impact that it's making. One thing I want to mention real quickly is that people can be reimbursed up to $1,200 for the training and $300 for the certification. And some of the things that were hard, for service providers, wrap their heads around, we're like, well, this is gonna be expensive. I need to send people to the training. And we did the $1,200 to help pay for the cost of the training, but also any other service, you know, any other expenses that would incur. So that's been helpful. And usually the exam is, I think it's $199. I have people here that, yeah, okay. And we reimburse at $300. So that helps pay for some of the time. But I do wanna just, and then I'm going to hand it over to anybody else that wants to say something. But we have seen, just as Darby was talking about earlier, that the homework, she did some homework and that created a relationship with a business. I had somebody pretty new in the field and took the training and said, oh my gosh, this was so fun. And right after her training, she supported somebody. And I think he got hired the next day or something, she said. And she just was so hungry to do that again. And so that was really fun. Another woman who works in the field professionally, but had been feeling sort of stuck maybe, went to a training, got inspired, and actually has a volunteer job, and through her volunteer job supported somebody to start their own small business. And he's now very successful in doing some things that he never thought he'd be able to do. And she just kind of calls me to remind me, like, that's so great. and it's also fun, especially in our rural communities. You know, I got to COVID happened right as we were doing this. I think we're in our fourth or third quarter and trying to get this off the ground and getting people connected to training that is available and matching them up with good trainings for them. But in rural Colorado, we have some places that the internet infrastructure has been hard and people sometimes don't have it. And what happened was they took the ACRE or the, I think it was the, also this was the ACRE training with a training entity in another state. So they got to learn all about other states, but also how to navigate that learning system so that they could, you know, get the training. And then they said, oh my gosh, we're using our job development tools and now we're going to do this remote supports. We don't have to worry about sometimes that barrier of transportation. So it's been a pretty neat learning experience. And at first people were hemming and hawing, like, oh, I've been doing this job for a while. Why is Colorado saying we need these professional development? And then they go and they're inspired and network. And it's been, for those reasons, it's been very positive. I don't know if anybody has anything else that they would want to share about that, because we can also talk about the challenges and our next steps and sustainability and stuff like that. All right, so let's see. I think some of the challenges that we had, we've been incorporating them in our discussion so far, but really was, how do people get connected? One of the neat things is we had money and then we needed to get people connected. But another challenge became, okay, so I have this list I can look through. Is IPS, IPS was sort of on our list and people were, can I take the IPS training? And we walked them through, like, well, what services are you delivering and what would make the most sense? But also just picking out the right training, like, we all come from different learning styles. And this gives us an opportunity to really say, oh, I want a self-paced training, or I need an interactive training, or I'm really academic, so I want to go to one of those places that's going to give me all of those articles and I get to talk to a professor, because some of the trainings are that's available to you. So that's been fun, and it's been neat because we can model what we want to see in the support that people are offering, that people have choices, and we're going to do everything we can to do the matches and make sure that you're growing as a professional and then supporting that growth within the people with disabilities that you're supporting to find those awesome jobs.
Hey, Katie, this is Marilee. Can you talk a little bit about how initially it was, put across as an expectation you need to do versus an opportunity, and how that sort of really spurred a lot of growth in the number of people who were becoming involved?
Yeah, thank you, Marilee. You know, at first we were so immersed in making sure everybody knew this is a new requirement. Everybody's going to need to know this. And we put it out as more of a policy and a regulation, and that did not go over well. But when we realized that that was not a good way to communicate what's going on, because that's really not what this is about. That's not why the voice of the people matters. It's really about this unique opportunity to grow professionally, get something that's nationally recognized, so that if you decide to move to a different state, that's still yours and your resume that you keep. And and it's a unique opportunity. I'm not sure who's listening in or the experiences here of people on the panel, but it's unique for the state to pay for professional development like this. And once we really talked about it more as an opportunity and a place for growth and also networking and growing together within your own teams, but then across, different states, people got more excited about it. And we've really learned to make sure that we're talking about this as a strength builder. And we're getting more and more people interested, and then they're telling their colleagues to do it. And so that's made a big difference. Yeah, thank you, Marilee. Good question.
Katie, this is Darby. And just to kind of expand from the DVR perspective, I mean, we have state vendors who come from all walks of life. They have lots of different credentials, and these trainings were so beneficial to them because it really gave them a much more focused training, so that really kind of everyone had that foundational level to providing supported employment services. And I would hear from supervisors of these service agency companies of how much they appreciated these, because they knew that that would be kind of one less set of training that they would have to provide. And so they knew that these were already approved, had been reviewed and approved by the state. And so they felt really comfortable sending their employees to this, and felt really good by the outcome of these trainings and then the tools they walked away from.
Yeah, and Darby, you're making me think of a question too about turnover. I think that probably many vendors are experiencing, sometimes you put somebody in training and then they're, sometimes people transition within a year or two. So another reason, right, for the capacity to, it's so great that they got that training. Ideally, they're going to use that wherever they've gone to. But then also how to get the people that are coming in access to that training too. And that's something else I want to mention about our regulation is that our opportunity is that people have until 2024 to get the training or certification. And then after that, if you're a new employee, you have up to 2 years. You just need to make sure you're supervised by somebody that has the right credentials. Yeah.
That's great, Katie. I think it's, you know, it really makes a big difference because there is often high turnover. And so you can do a big rollout, but if you only do the training for a short period of time, then the effect wears off as people turn over. So I love that you built it so that, you know, there's this kind of continuous loop.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to talk about one more challenge and it's not coming. Maybe we should breach the thought of sustainability because I know that was a big topic for. And one of the things I do want to say is I think it's neat that we've done the nationally recognized training and certification entities because I really think that does open up the door for ongoing ways to keep this going in a long-term way because we won't have to worry about, oh, what if one particular entity isn't there anymore? Or, you know, this just really sort of broadens, like we keep talking about the capacity and the scope. I don't know if anybody else has any ideas for, we were just about to enter year three and we're actually on the first day of year three planning for year six. So we're building in some of those strategies and ideas and trying to figure out ways that this can be a part of our culture and happen within that. But I think that maybe comes to, as we're doing this with national trainers that we'll probably have more Colorado trainers too, but it's going to be still part of that national community. And how can we... how can Colorado be a part of our national network and, professionalizing the field, for lack of better words.
Katie, I can jump in. This is Michelle. Yeah. So this has been something that's close to our hearts at ACRE because capacity and sustainability are so closely interconnected, but it's been really, really interesting to see how within Colorado, there are already organizations that are beginning to have an interest in providing training. I know of a couple you already have engaged and there are a few coming your way already that we haven't released yet. So we're really excited about that possibility and that growth and where that goes. I think there's also the important connection to make that I know you're focusing on a basic certificate and the CESP credential, but what's the next step, right? So you have a workforce that has all this great training and we're really pushing towards customized employment, but training isn't static, right? It's just like they say, you don't go to school and then graduate and don't pick up a book again, that there should be continual learning. So what is the next step beyond the basic certificate or the basic certificate, you know, with emphasis on customized employment? And what I love about the CESP is you have to get continuing education credits. So everyone is pushed in that direction naturally. If you want to have your CESP, you're going to continue that growth, and that's going to help sustain all of our accomplishments, right? And for ACRE, what we're trying to do is look at what other types of training could we provide that are endorsed with, you know, following the competencies. So we're looking at these 20-hour mini trainings. We have to work on them and figure out what they were going to look like and look at who can actually create them. But that's the next level, as well as a train-the-trainer model, which will really help build capacity and sustain all of our accomplishments. And you talk about people leaving. Trainers leave as well. And a big thing that's happening is people are retiring in our system, more and more people, I don't know how many emails I've gotten this year of people retiring, and they're like powerhouse people in our field. So we really need to sustain that and build a new workforce. So the best way to do it is through quality training and just continue with that training.
And this is Darby, and that's what we really want to see, kind of like what you had talked about, Michelle, with that emphasis on customized employment. So we have developed a performance-based criteria that we want to see for our service providers that provide customized employment services. And so our hope is that through really defining exactly what we want to see out of these service providers and really laying out that level, that higher level service that we want to see through customized employment services, that we really can expand that out to other training entities. And then also the hope is that these service providers will access the ACRE training and get that foundation of supported employment, but then do that continuing of education and work towards that certification to be able to provide customized employment services.
That's great.
One of the things that in IPS land, we encourage states to do, I mean, we have an annual meeting where all of our partners come together. And then usually each state has a meeting or conference as well. And Colorado has done a great job with that. So what it does is over time, it creates a really nice community of people, right? Like who know each other and get to check in, and they give out awards, and there's a bunch of different workshops on different topics. And so it's a really great opportunity for people to grow and develop like that too. And I would say too that our certification requires continuing education too. And I think it's great because things are always changing. Labor market practices, the internet has changed a lot of things about job searching, but the fundamentals remain. And so the more that we can stay connected and continue to grow as a field is great.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and I know IPS, so thank you, Jackie. You were reading my mind. Yeah. I'm not sure if there's anything else that anybody wanted to cover. I feel like that covers the list that I was hoping that we could talk about and share with the people listening in at the national conference. And hopefully there's stuff happening in the chat box, and people have access to the resources that we have attached. But does anybody want to say anything as far as a conclusion? Or I am so excited because I look forward to working with all of you for many, many years and in Colorado and beyond.
I have just a quick comment. I think that, you know, we've talked a lot about training in this session, and I think training is vital. But, you know, I want to emphasize sort of what we talked about at the beginning, and Mary Lee was saying, like, there's so much work that went on initially to get all the conditions ready to have people receive training and be able to use it. And so I see that a lot in the, like, consulting that I do, where it's like, well, we'll just offer a training and it'll work. And you usually can't do that, because you have to do technical assistance to get things set up. And, you know, if you offer training before people are really able to use that content and skill in their day-to-day work, it doesn't have the impact that you really want. And so I would say, you know, if you're thinking about this for your own local area, is to look at kind of where you're at, and maybe you're in a pre-implementation type phase where, you know, you have to figure out funding and staffing and all that, you know, be in the trenches. And but, you know, I've seen a lot of areas, you know, change their practices into doing supported employment more, and everyone starts somewhere. So, you know, you may be intimidated by Colorado and all the amazing things that they've done, but, you know, they started somewhere too. So it's just a matter of being tenacious and directed in your work to try to make it happen.
This is Mary Lee. Just to add to what Jackie was saying, truly, I mean, you don't know what's going to follow. The story is going to continue to unfold, and just don't be afraid. Just try to start somewhere, and feel free to reach out to us if we can be of help at all. in any way, but it really is a matter of just trying something, because it is so complex and there's so many different pieces and cogs that work together. You're not quite sure what's going to catch. And so start, just start somewhere and be that force that just keeps pushing things forward.
Go ahead, Kari. Sure. I was going to point to a great resource actually from ACRE and APSE. Thinking about the states that are implementing competency-based requirements, obviously Colorado is just a superstar, rock star state to look at. And ACRE and CESP and APSE came together to produce a document that goes through some of the considerations that states will want to think about when setting the tone and setting the stage, Jackie, like you were saying. So that is available, and we'll make sure we include that as a resource.
That's what I was going to say. So I'm glad you jumped right in there and did it first.
Well, great. If we were in a room together, we could be, answering questions and I don't know. But I think for now, please, like everybody has mentioned, we left our email addresses for you, and we don't know the answers, but we're certainly willing to help flesh them out. That's been the beauty of working with this wonderful panel is, okay, we don't really know how to do this, but let's keep at it, and we'll get there one step at a time. So I feel like that that is a big success in and of itself. And we want to share our learning and share our excitement, and we hope that we get to talk to whoever's listening here at some point in time.